Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined once again through the power of the World Wide Web by Scott Dunford, pastor at Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And we're joined by an important guest today whom I'm excited for Scott to introduce in just a moment. First, we want to say hello again to our new viewers. If you're watching us on NRB TV, or if you're watching us through the Wrath and Grace Universe app, we're grateful for both of these important platforms in bringing this show to more people. You know, Scott, all of God's people need to be involved in missions. The Great Commission is a task for the whole church to be about, not just a group of elite specialists. Yes, we need specialists, but we also need everybody in the Church of Jesus Christ to be praying, giving, sending, going. And I think that our conversation today is going to help us to do that well and think about what the ordinary Christian's engagement in the Great Commission actually needs to be, especially in those parts of the world where being a Christian is a lot more risky. First, if this is your first time joining us, if you're a podcast listener, most of our listeners are listening by audio podcast, remember to leave the show a positive rating and review in your podcast platform of choice. That helps this content get in front of other people who can be blessed by it and even mobilized to the field. We just appointed some new missionaries with ABWE, the organization that powers the Missions Podcast, because they found out about this organization through the Missions Podcast. And who knows, maybe God would have you to take some next steps in missions because of what you hear today. With all of that out of the way, Scott, why don't you introduce our guest? Again, I think this is something that every Christian needs to be thinking about. What are our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world where being a Christian takes a lot more risk? What are they going through?
Yeah, most people that I talk to outside of the state where I currently live think that if you come to California, you're going to be persecuted and beat up for your faith. And that isn't really true. But we are going to talk to someone who does deal with a lot of Christians who are facing real physical, financial, spiritual persecution for their faith. Andy Coleman, he is the president of Christian Emergency Alliance. You might know him from his podcast, the Christian Emergency Podcast. He's also got a new book out called In Days of Darkness, a manual for ordinary Christians facing unusual times. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we are really glad to have you.
Hey, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So just kind of starting us off, you know, this topic of persecution. I mean, we served in China when before we went. I mean, we were reading all sorts of books. We have churches reading that we'd come into that were already reading books that were really kind of focused on just like incredible persecution that they knew that had happened in China. You know, you might think of like The Heavenly Man or some other books like that. And our experience wasn't quite like that, although I did meet Christians who were beaten and imprisoned and hurt for their faith. That was happening. So how would you advise Christians to rightly think about their persecuted brothers and sisters around the world? Because we do know that's happening without getting sucked into some of the persecution hysteria that we know is out there too.
Yeah, I think that what I would just say is that when you're reading persecution accounts, it's a bit like watching a night clip on New York City if you're watching the news. If you only watch that news and they covered like the worst stories, you might be tempted never to visit New York City ever and be convinced that it would be a hellscape to walk off, you know, the tarmac. Well, in reality, you have to be savvy. You have to be smart. You have to know that there are, you know, areas you need to be very careful in, but by and large, there's going to be areas where you can do quite a bit. You can operate freely. You can enjoy your time. And I would say the same is true in a lot of these countries, countries that some people who haven't been, for example, to the Middle East, they might conclude that everywhere must be the same and it must be very dangerous and very scary. Whereas in some of these countries you'll visit and it's very pleasant. People are very nice. Are there flashes of persecution? Can things get out of control in different settings? Yes, they can. But by and large, it's a mixed bag. And we need to just remind ourselves of that. Unfortunately, sometimes the only stories we hear are the rough stories. But just realize that there is more going on, that God's doing things. And also, on an encouraging note, just to remind ourselves that in every country on earth, we have brothers and sisters in Christ there. The church is there. Some will contest that. I would gladly accept that challenge. But really, every country on earth has Christians in it, which means that there's good things, there's blessings pouring forth. And we all get to play some role in that as the global body.
Well, speaking of countries that maybe the average American at least might not think of as overly Christian, a lot of people have been talking about Syria over the past several weeks and months. And with the fall of the Assad regime, there have been headlines, some of them I think maybe a little sensationalized, but we've seen reports of many killings and Christians involved in some of these killings as the victims. Some of it also seems to be Muslim on Muslim violence. And, you know, Syria, you think of it as being in the Middle East. We as Americans have this simplistic snapshot of it in our minds as an Islamic place. And yet Syria is one of the oldest bastions of Christianity going back to the earliest period of the church. There's enduring Christian communities in these places that those of us who know Christ look and we recognize we have brothers and sisters in this part of the world as well. So what in your research can you tell us is happening in Syria? I think that's been the biggest question. I don't think we're likely to hear the full story on the news. And I think on the one hand, there's global interests that probably don't want to talk about Christian persecution because it doesn't fit the narrative. We want to make the world safe for democracy. That's the narrative. Yet on the other hand, I do think that there are some Christians and some sources who, as Scott mentioned earlier, we tend to sensationalize, not on purpose, but we're drawn to dramatic stories. When we hear stories of martyrdom or of persecution taking place, we know we need to pray for those believers, give and remember them in our thoughts and when we gather in worship. And so what's happening there and how should we be thinking rightly about it? Hey, listeners, we know you believe in missions. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to or watching this show. But have you ever wondered what your next step with the Great Commission should be? Maybe the Lord is leading you to serve somewhere yourself. Maybe the Lord is calling you to be a part of sending someone from out of your own church. Well, wherever you are with missions, if you're ready to get serious and find what your next step is, ABWE's 24-hour demo event is for you. Now, it's great to listen to a podcast about missions, but there's nothing that beats the in-person fellowship that can only take place face-to-face, where you're alongside other people that are in your similar station of life, thinking and praying together about your next steps. So if you want to join us at our next event, they happen all throughout the year at our Harrisburg, Pennsylvania-based international headquarters. You can go to demo.abwe.org. Again, that's demo.abwe.org and use the promo code podcast for a discount on your registration fee. So it takes all excuses away. What are you waiting for? Come find your next step with the Great Commission at demo.abwe.org, promo code podcast. Now back to the show.
Yeah, so what you've had is a long protracted civil war that recently, in a way, came to an end a few months ago. You had all of this came about really the most modern iteration of this conflict was with the Arab Spring. And ever since then, you've had rolling conflict between Sunni Muslims and Sunni jihadist groups targeting the government of Bashar al-Assad, who is an Alawite. An Alawite is a religious minority. They're predominantly located along the coastal regions of Syria. And they're, in a sense, you could think of them as an offshoot of Shia Islam. They're not Shia, but they're closely aligned with the Shia. And they've been in power, and they have lost power with the fall of the Assad regime. And the Sunnis who have filled that gap, in some cases, have really taken to some ugly measures. There have been some massive attacks, primarily targeting Alawites, Alawite civilians, and it's horrific to watch when this breaks out. And Christians were caught up in that. And we know of evangelicals that were pulled out of their apartments, that did lose their lives, that have suffered. Many have left. Many have gone over the border into Lebanon. But it's not Afghanistan at the same time. The fall of Afghanistan was truly something to watch, especially knowing Christians on the ground there and everything that was going on. But in Syria, It's a simmering boil right now. I believe that the HTS government, which is, again, this a Sunni, really, which was a jihadist group, which now has assumed power heavily backed by Turkey. They've shifted names over the years. They were closely aligned with the Nusra Front, and they were running operations into Syria for years. And as somebody who's been working in the region for years, I remember responding when they would attack Christian villages. So it is serious. Christians are in the crosshairs. But perhaps the best way that I could summarize this for, from a Christian perspective, is that when there were these, you know, a few weeks ago, when there was real violence ticking up, there was checkpoints and all of this, really the target was Alawites. But sometimes when Christians would be stopped at a checkpoint or interrogated, they'd be asked what their religion is, and they would say, you know, I'm a Christian. And they generally wouldn't be harmed. In most cases, they were allowed to just go along. But there was sometimes an ominous threat, like, just wait. We're dealing with this now. We're dealing with the Alawites now. Just wait. Mm-hmm. So for our ministry, the Christian Emergency Alliance, we're very cautious. In fact, we're concerned because we have a long-term lens. We're trying to look downrange. And we do have concerns about the state of Christianity. There's a lot of intimidation that's going on. There's Christian neighborhoods, and there's vehicles that are going through with loudspeakers proclaiming jihadist songs, trying to intimidate the families there. So it's not all horrific right now from the Christian perspective, but it is one that we're keeping a close eye on and we have concerns about.
I remember recently, I know a Palestinian Christian here in the Bay Area, and he was talking about his family's home in Joppa and leaving Joppa and all this history. And I asked him one time, just kind of innocently, so when did your family become Christians? And he kind of looked at me incredulously and said, when were we not? You know, like, you know, in his mind, their family line of Christianity goes all the way back to the time of Christ. And they can't remember a time when their family wasn't Christian. And to a lot of North Americans, that's surprising. You know, we don't think of Arab speaking peoples or Middle Eastern peoples as being Christian. And yet in Syria, there's this long history of Christianity that stretches, you know, much farther back than our history with Christianity. And so when we see these kind of things in the news, you know, when we see Christians being butchered in Syria, or I just saw something popped up on my formerly known as Twitter account this morning of a Syrian man just pleading because he felt like Christianity is going to be wiped out in Syria. They felt like that was an imminent threat, and he was calling on Christians around the world to come to their aid. So what would you say to Christians? What is your ministry's response to Christians here to how to respond to these really overwhelming pleas of Christians from around the world saying, help us?
Yeah, and the pleas of that Syrian Christian shouldn't fall on deaf ears, because you just look at what happened in Iraq. They had 1.3 million indigenous Christians in 2003, and that number is south of 200,000 now.
Wow.
So we should be reasonably concerned with the types of pressures that can be put in place in these areas where you've had the historic church forever. One of the things is opening people's eyes to the reality that we do have brothers and sisters in Christ in these countries, and they do have such a rich history. We as the global body need to rediscover that history and realize that's a part of us. That's a part of our story. We have family members in these areas, and that should change the way we think about all of this. But at the same point, as evangelicals, I think we need to recognize that there are some who have embraced their identity in Christ, but don't know the gospel. I've seen a lot of that where you'd meet people and they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. My family's been Christian for 1800 years. But you start talking theology and you realize that they really don't have a saving faith. So there's nuance in all of this. We need to be better connected as Christians at the Christian Emergency Alliance. The way we describe it is as a global body, we need more connective tissue. We need more connection points between the churches. We need more opportunities to share the gospel, to advance the banner of Christ, to help one another when things go wrong. And as a small ministry, the Christian Emergency Alliance, we're trying to fill that gap to an extent, to be able to bridge some of that. But we just need to reclaim some of this. And that's why a lot of our work has been just trying to provide basic context. Here's some of our Christian history, our story that you don't hear often. Here are some things that happen when Christians go through persecution. Here's different ways persecution presents itself. And the more that we can understand that, the more we'll understand what our brothers and sisters are going through, how we can pray. People will roll their eyes. I get arrows shot at me frequently because I do emphasize prayer, not just prayer, but we're trying to act and intervene and intercede. But prayer is important. We need to be praying for one another. I can't tell you how often I would see faces crying, you know, of Syrian Christians or Iraqi Christians or Nigerian Christians. Once I informed them that I knew of Christians in other countries who were going through hard times, but that they were praying for them. So often we can feel isolated, alone, and cut off. And in some cases, that's starting to happen. But as Christians, my prayer is that we would be better connected, better aware of developments, and able to pray for one another, which is powerful for the people that are involved, and also powerful for, and from what I've seen, the move of God in those different settings.
You know, speaking of providing some of that basic context, that's what we need. I love the connective tissue analogy. Americans, we tend to think that the entire world is the U.S., revolves around the U.S., and in some ways, maybe politically, that's true to a limited extent, but there's much more to the world out there. And one of the places that most of us don't have, again, much of a sense of what's happening is Nigeria. Back in January of 2024, we had Judd Saul on with Equipping the Persecuted, and we spoke with him about what's happening at the hands of violent Islamist militants to believers there, Boko Haram, and actually their ministry's role in equipping Nigerian believers, not just to evacuate, but even to defend themselves when needed, them, their families, their children. But talk to us about what's happening in Nigeria. I think that, from my limited understanding, looks to be one of the places where the type of persecution we're seeing is most intense, most physically violent, and yet very little is being discussed, certainly at a national or a political or a news and current events standpoint. And then even within the church, just, you know, people think of persecution in Iran, North Korea, China. Beyond that, people don't tend to realize what's happening in parts of West Africa.
Well, I'll do what I can, but Alex, you actually summarized it quite well. And we're familiar with Equipping the Persecuted. We've partnered with them on medical outreach, on widows and orphans, and direct aid in response to attacks. So we're very grateful for them. And they're right that Christian communities do need to be able to defend themselves. It's no different than if there was wolves outside my house that threatened my family. I would, as a shepherd, I'm responsible for that. That's not a tough one. Especially in northern Nigeria. Again, a lot of this is nuanced. People just hear Nigeria, and we have to emphasize most of these problems are in the northern stretches or the middle belt of Nigeria. But it's really, it's perhaps the gravest kinetic persecution against Christians right now. I think that is an accurate statement. The scale of violence is unbelievable. Entire villages cleaned out. Ongoing persecution where it doesn't get reported unless the body count reaches several dozens. So it's just always going on, very poorly reported, very under-resourced. There's a lot of intimidation. There's a lot of intimidation, I think, of the church in Nigeria, because if they start to speak up, targets get put on their backs. We as Christians need to be better aware of what's going on there. At the Christian Emergency Alliance, one of the things that we try to do is help get windows into those developments through our Twitter feed, or formerly Twitter, now X, because people don't speak up about it. The mainstream media does not care about these issues. They do not rise to the level of them caring.
Yeah.
But as the church, that's not okay. We as the church do need to care about what's going on with the Christians over there. And actually, there's a lot of opportunity in Nigeria, a ton of opportunity. So much of it is English speaking, so people can understand, you know, firsthand accounts of what's going on over there. Equipping the Persecuted has done a fantastic job of scooping up some Christian journalists. And there's an organization called Truth Nigeria that's summarizing some of these accounts. So there are resources that we're working to develop so that the global body can know what's going on there. And unfortunately, so much of this has been shrouded in silence. And the enemy has loved that. The enemy has loved mowing down entire villages, taking over these cities, renaming them, and then using them as base of operations for ongoing jihad campaigns. But the moments that Christians are able to defend themselves there, or the moments that some of these stories start to reach out. We just recently broached a story about a man named Sunday Jackson, who's been in jail for 10 years and is now looking at the death penalty because he stood up when his farm was overrun and he was attacked. He defended himself and his attacker lost his life. And now he's on the hook for a death sentence. But we're trying to get all kinds of attention on this. And when that happens, when we add daylight to this and this darkness starts to get pushed back, things happen. Mm. So there's a lot of opportunity in Northern Nigeria, but it is one that the church has to be much more drilled into. And that's at the local church level. That's across our states, across the West. We need to be much more attuned to what's going on in Nigeria with our brothers and sisters there.
What is the government doing? Are they okay with it? Are they outraged but powerless to stop it? Because, again, most of us probably don't have much context for what's happening in one country. We might know Africa is kind of a gradient, right? Yeah. With the mm-hmm. North being more Islamic and then steadily more Christian, and then very Christian, culturally at least, as you go further south. So where is Nigeria as a government, as a country, in the midst of all of that?
That's a great question, Alex. And that's one of the areas where we have to be discerning and realize that all is not what it seems. So one of the patterns that we're recognizing in Nigeria is that there does seem to be a lot of corruption and even facilitation at the government levels. Mm. So in some areas, I'm convinced that you have very powerful players who have an Islamist bent, who provide top cover when these attacks happen. You never find out the identity of the attackers. There's really nobody ever held accountable. It's all kind of gone in the wind. I think you have a lot of intimidation. You have some politicians, you have some in the judiciary who are intimidated to the point where they don't want to counter any of this because they're afraid that problems will follow them. But there's also been these problems where, for example, the government rolled out a rehabilitation program. And from like a counterinsurgency perspective, they would go in and try to reform some of these Islamists. And it doesn't appear that that program has been very effective. But unfortunately, these Islamists, sometimes after carrying out attacks, even harming Christians, killing Christians, have been released. They have even been given stipends. And some have been given government positions, and some of those government positions are in the security services. So they're supposed to help with that, but it looks like the security services at times has actually helped the Islamists. It looks like weapons have moved to the Islamists. Often when there was an attack carried out by Islamists, the security services would hold back. They would retreat. They wouldn't show up for a day or two until well after the attack. And then when they would show up, in some cases, instead of going after those that had attacked the city, they instead focused on maybe the four Christians who stayed back and tried to defend their city and instead came after them. So I think you have this nefarious inner working between some government channels, some in these Islamist organizations like Boko Haram, which is now really the Islamic State, Fulani Islamist groups and militias. You have a lot of jihadist operators in this area, and I think there's a lot of coordination going on, unfortunately.
I would encourage people to go online. You can see lots of maps that kind of show that contested ridge, right? Because a lot of these countries you'd think of as Christian countries, like a country like Ghana or even Togo, you know, when I say Christian, I mean culturally Christian, but like on the top parts of these countries is where this radical activity is taking place. And a lot of money is being poured into there by Islamic nations as well.
I just want to inject a lot of those northern communities. We can start to think of them as Islamic, but many of those are ancestrally Christian. Those are Christian lands that are being overrun. And the closest example that I can come up with is the conquest of North Africa.
Yeah.
When we think of, you know, the third century and all that was going on in North Africa, and then within a few decades, it was gone. That's the closest comparison I have to what's going on in northern Nigeria. Those are mostly Christian lands that are just being dislodged in real time with not a whisper. So, yeah. But yeah, the maps are very helpful for us developing our understanding.
So you have a new book that just came out. I love the title, In Days of Darkness, A Manual for Ordinary Christians Facing Unusual Times. As we're getting close to the end of our interview, what can you tell us about your new book and why should Christians go out and get it?
Yeah. So this book, and I like the title. I love the cover on it. It's a Rembrandt painting, which is actually the family of Christ. That's Mary, Joseph, and little Jesus on the run. It's called Flight to Egypt, done by Rembrandt, a Christian painter. But it's a great picture of how things can seem so dark and overwhelming, and yet there is light that penetrates that, and we can lean into that. God is in control. He is moving through that darkness. And this book was born out of my travels into the Middle East or Central Asia or Africa. And I would come back to the United States or Western countries, and Christians would find out where I was going and what I was doing. And they would privately pull me aside, and some with tears in their eyes would confess that they could tell the pressures were ticking up around them. It wasn't the same culture they grew up in. They didn't know what to tell their kids. They didn't know how to respond themselves. And usually in 5 or 10 minutes, I could share some context, share some insights from the persecuted. And after that, a few minutes, they could generally find their feet again. The horizon had stabilized, and they just had some context on our Christian history, on some wise ways that we can respond, what was happening to, and help them make sense of that. And that's what they really needed. And so this book is really just a constellation of those types of conversations, those points, that just talks a bit about our history, about what's happening culturally around us, what persecution is, what are some wise ways that I've seen people respond faithfully to persecution, and some other ways that I've seen not go so well. You know, we don't try to lionize the persecuted church. They're part of our brothers and sisters. And just as I've stepped in it before, I've seen persecuted Christians step in it. And I'm just trying to strengthen those believers who are confused by the days they live in. And it doesn't take a lot of context to help them out. And that's what we're striving to do with In Days of Darkness.
And Andy, if I could just commend you for one thing as we wrap up. It seems like there's always extremes. On the one hand, you might have believers in the U.S. who will act as though, oh, the sky is falling. Things are so hard for Christians here in the States, and not even recognizing how much harder it is for other believers in the world. And then you have people who, again, as we've mentioned a few times, and we'll get into more in our bonus episode for subscribers, that we sensationalize things that are happening overseas because we're drawn to dramatic stories and we want to be on the side of the angels. You don't really do either one of those. You do, I think, a great job of recognizing the reality of what's happening for our brothers and sisters abroad and mobilizing support for them. But then also recognizing that as we see Christian cultural consensus eroding in the West, that's not nothing. It's not the same as being literally thrown to the lions, but it's not nothing either. And we need to think biblically and discerningly about all of those different situations. And so I appreciate that so much about your content and your ministry. And in the last minute that we have left, share how people can follow you and your work, learn more about Syria, Nigeria, and get a hold of In Days of Darkness.
Yeah, they can find us at ChristianEmergency.com if they're interested in the ministry of the Christian Emergency Alliance. If they want some of those news updates and pieces that stories that don't get a lot of coverage, they can find that at our Twitter feed with Christian Emergency Alliance. If they would like the book, it comes out May 6th, but we do have early advanced signed copies before that time. They could go to indaysofdarkness.com. Happy to get them that. But yeah, we're just grateful for the prayer, for people wanting to connect and learn more about their brothers and sisters, and also missions, what's going on around the world. That's exciting stuff to be a part of.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, brother, for being on. Thank you for joining us as well. The Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE, a global family of ministries with workers reaching 91 nations. To learn more about ABWE and maybe even take your next steps in the Great Commission, go to abwe.org. You can get more content from us here at the Missions Podcast at missionspodcast.com. And you can join us for our premium subscriber bonus segment that we'll record right after we're done this recording. And we'll dive into that question of how can we avoid sensationalizing persecution? What's really happening out there? Is it quite what we've been told? You can go to missionspodcast.com/premium to get access there. And for the rest of you, we'll see you on our next episode of the Missions Podcast. Go make disciples of all the nations.